Community Radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Hello and good evening. Welcome to Interchange on WFHB. I am your host, Ryan Dawes. Election campaigns, as you know, are heating up across the country. Notable races include obviously the race for U.S. President, but also the recall election of Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, as well as the race for Indiana Governor, and also one of Indiana's U.S. Senate seats. But more locally, here in South Central Indiana, voters also will decide in November who will represent the U.S. Congressional 9th District, which includes Bloomington, Lawrenceburg, Jasper, New Albany, Madison, Seymour, Nashville, and parts of Columbus. Tonight, I have in the Firehouse Studios with me one of the contenders for this seat, the winner of the 9th District Democratic Congressional Primary, Shelley Yoder. Shelley, thank you very much for joining us here on Interchange.
Ryan, it's great to be with you. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, first off, congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's been an exciting few weeks, definitely.
Now, this was your first official political campaign for political office. You say you've been interested in, invested in politics all your life, but this is your first time as a participant. What was your first impression of politics as a participant?
It's been a very positive experience. I think that we get out of what we put into something, and for me, it was an opportunity to bring just a lot of energy, a lot of hope, and a lot of optimism to something that seems pretty hopeless at this point, with the approval rating of Congress being at an all-time low of 9%. And that's one of the ways that I've chosen to live my life, and I guess that's how I decided to get into politics, was to bring that same sort of joyful, hopeful, and realistic common sense approach to this role of being in politics.
Now, you talk about the dismal approval rating of Congress. Describe where you were and what you were doing when you first thought to yourself, I want to do that. I can do that, better. Otherwise, why would you be running? So what were you doing and what made you come to that conclusion that, I'm going to jump in there and get involved?
Well, I think the first time I articulated it was back in 2010 when the incumbent was defeated and the current incumbent won. And I was pretty upset and frustrated because I wanted more of an approach to politics for this seat here in the 9th District to be one that had more of a common sense approach. And having a very, far right Tea Party candidate win that seat, one that's been held by Lee Hamilton and for years, 34 years, and then later Barron Hill, it just didn't seem that that was going to be a good direction for the 9th District. And so I was pretty upset about that and said to my husband, I am going to get involved and I'm going to take that seat back. I mean, it was just that night and I was pretty fired up. But then going forward, I'm a working mom. I have three great kids and am busy in so many different ways that life just, took off, just like all of us live our busy lives, taking care of our kids and trying to make ends meet, put food on the table and have a job that we feel good about. And here we were looking at the next election for 2012. And my husband, I was at work and my husband calls me and he says, you just have to do this. And I'm like, what? And he says, you have to run. I'm sitting here listening on the radio. And he was listening to a program and he said, you can do this. You need to run. And I say, I'm at work. I don't have time for this. Call me. We'll talk about this later. And I hang up. And that conversation, that was in January of this past year. And so it was just in the back of my mind. And as the news started reporting on who was running, and the day sort of got closer and closer, my husband and I just sat down and said, "What do we do?" And he said, "You can do this. You can run." And so we thought about it. I said, "Well, I need to sleep on it." This was February 9th. The last thing I needed to do was sleep on it. I needed
the
time. That's right. The deadline is February 10th. And so I slept on it and woke up that next morning, and he said, "What do you think?" And he asked me this great question. "Tomorrow morning," which would have been Saturday, "we wake up. You have not put your name on the ballot. How do you feel?" And that was an easy question to answer. And I knew I would be pretty disappointed with myself, because I just felt like I can do this. Not necessarily, or I can do this, and I want to do this. And so we drove up to Indianapolis, and I put my name on the ballot.
That's exciting. Now, you have done everything from working at your parents' service station. You've also worked at a hardware store when you were much younger. And then on up, you have a Master's of Divinity, another master's degree as well. And now you're the Associate Director of Professional Development for Indiana University's Kelley School of Business. Now, throughout the entirety of your professional experience, service station included, because I think that's also can be valuable as well in meeting people and hearing concerns. What experiences from these professional jobs that you've had do you draw on to help voters relate to you?
Well, I think just early on, my parents instilled in me this idea of sense of community. And I grew up in a Mennonite home. I grew up in a Mennonite community. And so there was this broad sense of what family means, of what it means to support one another, to watch out for your neighbors. And the definition of neighbor in this community was quite broad. And so I think I just grew up knowing that we watch out for each other. And, you know, my experiences watching my parents run the filling station, and seeing my grandparents run that filling station, people just came in, you know, to sit and grab a soda, watch some Cubs on our black and white television. Those were the days where you did sit and have a conversation. My parents, as much as they could, took a coffee break at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We actually walked to the coffee shop and sat down, and they had a cup of coffee, and then we'd go back. And I mean, I wasn't at the station every day, but in the small ways, I mean, I was young, but in the small ways I could help out, I wanted to help out. That was part of contributing to the greater good, filling the pop machine. We used to actually have the opportunity to feed the pigeons, which I know is a funny thing, but we would have this drawer we'd pull out, and there would be feed in there. We'd go out and we'd put it on the driveway. We would be able to, cover up the oil spots where the cars would be pulling into the garage, have an opportunity. One thing that was really cool was to watch my mom wash the windshields on those cars. That looked so fun. And, just taking that squeegee and pulling back and seeing that water come down. I mean, just as a kid, it was an indelible time in my life watching us all work together. And then watching my parents have to go through a really hard time of deciding what to do when that business was no longer lucrative, and it was basically it was sinking us, and they had to decide what to do, and they got out from underneath it. And I watched my parents have to find another way to make a living, which was a scary time. Watching my dad, it was painful. He was the owner of the Yoder service station and Yoder cell. And he looked at it, I think, as an opportunity, even though it was difficult. He looked at it as an opportunity to truly reinvent himself. And I had the pleasure of seeing that happen, and him not giving up hope and opening up another small business and starting over. So during that time, we all went back to work, and I did get a job at our little local hardware store, and there started my professional life in Shipshewana, Indiana.
Now, let's leap forward in time to your present occupation at the professional development department at the Kelley School here at IU. You know, as you do that work, what do job prospects look like for recent grads, and you know, mm-hmm. how has that changed in the last couple of years? Do you think things are improving as you help these students find jobs, or do you think it is getting more dismal? What is your opinion?
Mm-hmm. Well, just to be clear, I've stepped aside to devote full time on the campaign for now, but we can talk about that for sure. I work with the students who are earning master's degrees in information systems. So in technology, the prospect looks really very good. And in other areas, it is rough. Being someone who is concerned about job creation, sustainable jobs for the 9th District, it concerns me greatly that the jobs that I was working with the students on securing and the corporations who are recruiting, many of those jobs are not in the 9th District, almost all of them. I mean, we do have Cook, which we are so fortunate to have, but outside of that, the students were looking at jobs elsewhere. And running for the position of representing this district, it is first and foremost, the top of my list is creating sustainable jobs, positioning the 9th District to attract manufacturing jobs that will provide families with the security that they need in order to provide for their families, but also opportunities for young people to live in the homes and communities in which they grow up. I think that is one of the sad things is students want to return home, but there really aren't very many opportunities to draw them home. But what we need to do is make certain that we provide those, and being partners with community leaders to establish those opportunities within these communities throughout the 9th District. And I did want to clarify, the 9th District has changed significantly. So, you know, now we're including, we have Greenwood and Franklin and Martinsville up north of Bloomington, and those are new cities to the district, towns and cities. And we also have, cities in Lawrence. We have Bedford, and then it does go down to the river. So, Columbus is no longer in our district, and so we don't have Cummins, which is such a great employer for the state of Indiana and really internationally. But for the students that I work with, their prospects are good because they're headed into a field that is so promising. But what we need to do is to attract those businesses that do high-tech, global, innovative types of manufacturing and get those jobs here so folks within the 9th District have opportunities.
Now, I want to talk about how you do that a little bit later in the show. I'd like to talk a little bit more about the experiences you bring. Now, you're also a former Miss Indiana. You won this in 1992. One of the cool things that I think you got to do was you got to tour all 92 Indiana counties. What did you learn from this?
Well, I think the great thing about the experience of being Miss Indiana is I realize that it is an honor and a privilege to be invited into somebody's home and life and community, that I am a guest. And to have somebody say, we will take time to come see you at this venue or just to engage in a conversation. Aren't we fortunate? I mean, that was how I looked at it. I was very fortunate to have that opportunity. At the time, I used the title of Miss Indiana to talk about the importance of education, to talk about the importance of healthcare. And it's interesting that those kinds of passions and policies still remain true to my heart today. And that's what I talk about throughout the 9th District. So, while different, there are many similarities as well.
So as you have traveled throughout the 9th District campaigning throughout the primary and then also after since you won the primary, has there been a certain individual or story that you've heard that has really stuck with you and has, motivated your campaign?
I've heard so many amazing stories. One that really, it almost haunts me. I met a gentleman down south and I showed it. The thing that was so great is I showed up to a meeting that ended up getting canceled, and the two of us just showed up, and I did not know that it had been canceled. And so I love that saying, there are no coincidences. So basically, I just say, let's go grab supper. So we went and had some supper, and we were talking about, you know, how things were going in his community and how things were going for him. And he was telling me that a few years back, he loved horses, and a horse had stepped on his foot, and he thought it was just bruised, but it progressively got worse, but he couldn't do anything about it. He did not have any health care coverage whatsoever, no insurance. So he was just hoping that it was just a bruise, it would get better, but as the days went on and on, it got sore and sore and more difficult to put pressure on it. And eventually, by the time he did go in, he did have a fracture, and an infection had set in. He lost his foot based on something that could have been solved had he had access to health care and insurance, but because he didn't, he prolonged his care and ended up losing his foot. And then the whole process of him having to have a prosthetic and being the expense of that, I mean, it was just heartbreaking. And for many people in the 9th District and in Indiana, we have families going bankrupt based on health care needs, and we should be outraged. This is not a sustainable plan for a district, a country, and we need to start addressing it. But this was a story that really stood out to me.
We're speaking with Shelley Yoder, 9th District Democratic Congressional candidate. We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us.
Support for WFHB comes from Russian Recording, a professional, locally owned recording studio offering audio production and services at any level or genre of artists, bands, and labels. Russian Recording, 1021 South Walnut in Bloomington. More information online at RussianRecording.com.
And we're back. You are listening to Interchange here on WFHB. I'm Ryan Dawes. We're speaking with 9th District Democratic Congressional candidate Shelley Yoder. Now, one of the things I find interesting about your primary win is that Robert Winningham raised much more money than you did during the primary, yet obviously you garnered more votes than he did. From what you know of Todd Young's fundraising abilities, how do you think money will factor into this campaign leading up to November?
To say that money doesn't matter is foolish. It's unrealistic. So money does matter. However, I think coupled with that is money isn't everything. One thing that I've found out in my life and as well as witnessed is there is a desire to be able to throw money at anything and solve the problem. But there are some things you just can't throw money at and always come out on top. And we will approach this campaign much the same way. We're going to raise the money to deliver the message we need to deliver. I love racing. I'm a runner, not because I enjoy, I'm this big running competitor. I love it because it makes me feel good. It's important to take care of, my physical health. But one thing that I tell myself and my friends when they're getting ready to race is run your race. And so thinking about the running for Congress, I hadn't made that connection. And so I was talking to somebody about this very thing about money, and I realized, Shelley, just run your race. Raise the money you need to deliver your message and to run an effective race. But raising, you know, money just for the sake of raising money, I don't think that's a responsible use of resources. But I do recognize that you need money in order to be competitive, and we certainly will be.
Now, we were talking a little bit about Citizens United, that particular Supreme Court case against the Federal Election Commission, and then the subsequent creation of what we now call super PACs. What is your opinion of this? Do you think that the creation of super PACs, obviously they fund both sides, Democrat and Republican, do you feel like this particular ruling favors one party over another or one particular interest over another?
Well, I think whether or not who it favors or if both parties benefit, I don't think that's even relevant. I think that Citizens United needs to be addressed. It needs to be overturned. We need to amend the Constitution to right this wrong. It's a wrong direction for our country to say that corporations are the same as people, that corporations have, in essence, a personhood. Just is wrong. And so regardless of who benefits more, I think it's looking at, is this more wrong or is this more wrong? I mean, it's just wrong. So I look forward to the day when Citizens United is overturned.
I see. Now, money aside, let's talk about some of your platforms, some of the issues that you hope to focus the spotlight on as you run against Representative Todd Young. First off, we've talked about healthcare job creation. What are some issues that you think Hoosiers want to hear about? What do you think will keep the average voter engaged in this campaign?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think people are definitely concerned about the budget and the deficit. So we definitely need to be discussing that and finding common sense and a real effort in addressing the budget and the deficit. Currently, we need to fairly and adequately balance the budget. And on top of that, job creation. The lack of job opportunities in the 9th District needs to be addressed, and we need to focus our efforts in bringing sustainable manufacturing jobs, good-paying jobs to the 9th District. And I think you know, one area that is a great focus for the 9th District is green technology and being a leader in that. We have leaders in the biotechnology field and bioinnovative technologies here in Indiana, and the 9th District needs to tap into that and remain just as competitive as we see in other pockets throughout Indiana. And I would definitely be an advocate and a partner with the communities for them as their representative in Washington. We also need to be looking and not giving up on the importance of investing in education. We are seeing here in the Paul Ryan and Todd Young, who has voted on this twice, act of reducing the amount of Pell Grants that students have access to. And what we need more than ever is to make certain that we have a workforce that is educated and has skills that employers need. You know, there's one thing to have the jobs, but then if you have a workforce that can't access those jobs because they fall behind in the skills necessary for those jobs, we're not helping. Those need to go hand in hand. So investment in the community with access to accessible, affordable education is another issue that the 9th District is talking about. Students, the generation from about, I would say, 18 to 27, that pocket, they are worried about their futures, you know, having school debt, coming out of college or even a community college or, you know, skills training with debt when you're trying to find a job and maybe even start a family, start your life, start your career. These are issues that Congress needs to address and that the 9th District voters are definitely talking about. And on the other end of the spectrum, Social Security and Medicare. You know, our seniors are are scared, and as they should be. We're looking, you know, the current proposal of privatizing Social Security is one that I think has proven that looking to the stock market to be able to provide security to our seniors is the wrong direction. And I want to work to protect Social Security and make certain that seniors know that I am somebody who will fight for them on that cause.
Now, I think that balancing the budget is pretty universally well accepted as something both sides want to accomplish, but the way in which you do that becomes divisive, becomes a way in which people will part ways and, you know, refuse to work together. You mentioned education, and that would obviously be a, you mentioned the Pell Grant, so that would obviously be an expenditure. Where do you think you part ways with Todd Young on ways in which to balance the budget? Give us some idea of what you think you would cut, what you think you would preserve, where you would think you would reduce taxes, increase taxes. All of these things affect balancing the budget.
Well, first, I think what I want to say is all legislators, Congress, needs to come to the table open. We need to have an approach to this that isn't so firm in how it, quote unquote, has to be it, my way or no way. I think that is, has done a disservice to the American people, and why Congress is at an all-time low in their approval rating is that we are just stuck in the quagmire of it's this way or no way. And now we have, you know, I think we see that on the extreme on the extremes. And we have a, you know, in Richard Murdoch and Todd Young in the Tea Party, a very one way of approaching this and no wiggle room that we have seen even in his voting record. No wiggle room whatsoever. It's going to be this way and no way. And when it comes to balancing the budget, we're going to have to be much more partisan. I mean, less partisan and more bipartisan in that approach. We have to come together and find a way to work in the middle of the aisle in order to fully help the American people and the crisis that we have before us. You know, what I want to see, as far as you were asking what you would cut, I think this notion that investing in education is an expense, it is an investment. Period. It is an investment because the return that you're going to get on every dollar spent far outweighs that $1. If you look at Head Start, which is another program that Todd Young wants to take away funding, if you look at the return on investment with programs such as Head Start, for every dollar that gets spent, we get $7 back. That's a pretty awesome. I wish my bank account would reflect such a return on investment instead of, you know, the current state of affairs. But, you know, so looking at education as an investment. But things I would address, definitely looking at corporate loopholes, giving tax breaks to corporations that are manufacturing overseas. That needs to be stopped and needs to be addressed. We could definitely save money there, and I would do some cuts there. I would definitely want to look at, the big oil and the tax breaks that are being given to big oil, and cutting, making sure that we have money coming back to the people and not going to big oil. And right there would be two great ways that are places that I would start, as well as looking at ways that we can draw our military and defense spending overseas. This is, you know, an opportunity to look at ways that we can return spending to the pre-Iraq, pre-Afghanistan war spending and save there.
I see. Now let's talk. You were talking about the gentleman that you met, where it was just you and he at the canceled campaign rally.
Yes.
And you were talking about healthcare. What is the direction you would like to see us go pertaining to healthcare? You mentioned that it's a tragedy that he was not able to find affordable health care, and therefore, as you say, he had to have his foot amputated. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we help this guy?
Well, I mean, if we look at just this one case, the amount of money that was then spent in fixing the problem versus had it just, if he had had access to insurance and could have had the foot looked at right away, he wouldn't have lost his foot. There was no reason to have his foot amputated. But because of the infection, because it took so long to get the care, because he didn't have access to care and he couldn't pay for it, that's what we're talking about. When we as a country are looking at ways of funding healthcare, we are addressing a system that is truly a healthcare, it's a sick care system and not a well care system. And we're paying for it in ways that people who don't have access to healthcare, they utilize the emergency room as their primary care help. And that ends up being so much more costly for the American people than if we had access to begin with. So we need to look at both of those, what we're spending and what we're saving, because definitely people say, well, how can we expand Medicare? If we're looking at giving access to all people, how can we expand healthcare and Medicare and afford it? Well, we need to first look at the expenditures that are happening with utilizing emergency care as our primary care, because it's far more expensive than if we would invest on the front end and keep people healthy and in a well care system. I think in the long run, statistics show that would be a secure system and way to keep our country healthy and strong.
Now, talk a little bit about Obama's healthcare reform, what some people call Obamacare. Do you feel like it goes far enough after everything is completely implemented? Are there any glaring discrepancies that you have with it? And also, are there components of it that you are in favor of? Mm-hmm. I myself, for example, am a beneficiary of Obamacare, if you will. I got a free ear surgery out of it because of the age of 25.
Yes, being on
extension. Yeah, exactly. That's how I personally benefited from it. But there may be some discrepancies that others have with it. Pertaining to cost and insurance company or mm-hmm. businesses providing insurance, so forth. What would you say to that?
I think that is what you are describing right now is a huge benefit of the Affordable Care Act, and that is that youth can stay on their, young people can stay on their parents' insurance until the age of 26. That is that was a gaping hole in providing care to a younger generation that we need to be able to, you need access. You have healthcare needs, and being able to access your parents, our life has changed significantly today than it was, when my parents were young. I mean, they were married at age, 18 and 19, and they were well on their way. And we're prolonging that. We have people, young people are getting into college and pursuing advanced studies after high school. And yet we need to be able to, they need access to health care. So this piece of the Affordable Care Act, I think, is much needed and is a great piece of that legislation, and as well as closing that loophole in access to prescriptions for our seniors, I think is a really important piece of the Affordable Care Act that I think is a really positive step forward, and giving access to health care to millions of people is a step in the right direction. Had my friend that we were talking about had this, he could have saved his foot and not lost his foot. So I think there are definitely pieces to the Affordable Care Act that I hope are able to continue. I think that there are pieces and to that legislation that are very good.
Now, also, what are some of the ways in which you think you would part ways with, or maybe agree with Todd Young on student loans? Obviously, that has a huge impact on the way in which young people can start their lives, or even people who go, older people who do continuing education. Mm-hmm. How from your perspective, working or having worked in higher education, how are you seeing student loan debt affect individuals as they look for jobs, as they look for a place to live? And also, is there a way that you know, that this can be addressed? Or is it just something that we have to deal with because we signed and, you know, we got our education and, you know, now we have to pay for it? You know, what stance would you take, and are there ways in which you think students can get help?
I definitely think there needs to be a partnership. We're not talking about a free ride for anybody. People want to be able to access a reasonable debt in order to pursue their dreams and get the jobs that they want, have the education that they want. No one's looking for a free handout. But I think keeping interest rates on these loans that are at an affordable rate, and having making sure that Congress stays on top of that, and not taking advantage of students is important. And as we have a new generation graduating from, whether it's community college or a four-year college, they should not be staring at thousands and thousands of dollars in debt. We should protect this new up-and-coming workforce and provide them with stepping stones for a prosperous future, not keeping them in a stranglehold of debt that they can't access the jobs that they choose and want to pursue because they know they just have to, you know, just make the widgets in order to make ends meet. We need young people pursuing careers and jobs in which they're passionate about in order to, you know, access the creativity that will keep this country as great as it always has been. And it's based on those innovative, creative risks that so many of our great Americans in the past have done. And we want to be able to provide that for the young today.
We've been speaking with 9th District Democratic Congressional candidate Shelley Yoder. We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us. And we're back. You are listening to Interchange here on WFHB. I'm Ryan Dawes. We're speaking with 9th District Democratic Congressional candidate Shelley Yoder. Now, Shelley, you have publicly voiced your opinions throughout the campaign on several issues and bills, specifically pertaining to women. For example, the Violence Against Women Act, the Paycheck Fairness Act. You were also very critical of the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform hearings regarding to the contraceptive coverage rule, specifically the fact that there were no women on that particular hearing panel. Now, obviously, you were the only woman among the primary field. With all these bills and issues pertaining to women in the media, in the spotlight right now, do you think that the fact that you were a woman had influenced voters?
Well, I do want to say that one thing that came out during the primary with my opponents, it was brought to the attention that, you know, this is something that we care about during election years only. And I brought to their attention that, no, it isn't. These are issues that women face every day. It isn't just a campaign issue. It just so happens that they are issues to try to win votes from women. But these are women's lives that live this day in and day out, whether it's wage fairness, whether it's violence in the home or with a boyfriend or girlfriend. This is the lives of women. And yes, I have been vocal about it. Now, did it help me pull ahead and win in the primary against four male opponents? I don't know. I think that we are definitely wanting some change in Congress. We have 17% of our current Congress that are women, which is pretty outrageous to me. In 2012, that we have only 17% representation of women. And so maybe I hope that people want a fresh voice, someone who will bring a fresh perspective to Congress, and that certainly was something that we heard from the constituents once they voted primary night.
Now let's talk about the Violence Against Women Act and currently being disputed in Congress. You were in favor of the Senate version of this bill and the House changed it. Talk about the ways in which it changed in a way that mm-hmm. you aren't in favor of.
You know, the Senate bill was very bipartisan, and many people worked together to come up with that bill. And it gets to the House, and then it gets changed. And what we have now, what the House put forth, is a very watered-down Violence Against Women Act. And it takes certain populations out of coverage. It's an act that says you will be protected only if you are, you know, this sort of a woman, but not all women. And that to me is unacceptable. I think these are steps backwards that the House has is promoting and what they are suggesting, and it's outrageous. So yes, I was very disappointed.
And also the Paycheck Fairness Act. Talk a little bit about that, and is what kind of opposition you hear on this, and then also explain why you are in favor of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, currently we have a national average of that women get paid for the same kind of work, 77 cents to every dollar that a man earns. And in Indiana, we are one of the leaders of being the worst in the nation, and we pay 72 cents for every dollar for the exact same work. That's like, for in the state of Indiana, in a year, that's like $13,000 that a woman is being denied for the exact same work. Money that could be going towards, you know, providing for her family, food, housing. I mean, if you think about what could happen with $13,000, providing health care for your kids and for yourself, providing education opportunities, providing a savings, my goodness, retirement savings. These are real, you know, that's a significant difference. It's not just something to say, oh, you know, so what? It's a couple of pennies. No, it's not a couple of pennies. And then it's just the bottom line. It's just not fair. And we are a country based on equal rights. And so I support the Paycheck Fairness Act. And I absolutely think that I'm very disappointed that once again the Senate didn't pass it.
Now, why do you think we are still having this conversation about equal pay?
I think we're still having it because sexism is still alive today, and we need to continue to just, you know, remind people and not forego the important cause of fairness for women. I think we're still talking about it because for so many women, we are busy. For the majority of, not for the majority, but for so many women, I think it's 12 million women, they are the primary caretakers for their families, and we're busy. We have a lot on our plates. We're raising kids, holding down jobs, caring for sometimes our parents, our aging parents. We are caring for our communities. We are involved in our churches. And unfortunately, things like this just get fall by the wayside because we're so busy caring for other people that we fail to care for ourselves. And here is a very good example of that. So we're still talking about it because women are so busy living their lives and caring for other people that things like paycheck fairness continue to be an issue.
Now, you kind of mentioned earlier that, you know, they're not a focus group. Women are not a focus group, but there's still reason to advocate on their behalf through legislation, obviously with these two bills that we are talking about. What I'm wondering from you is, are there ways in which you can, like reach across party lines and ignore sort of demographics and figure out ways in which you can appeal to women? And I guess I'm kind of contradicting myself, but do you, like, for example, if you're talking about the war on women, as I think I've heard you say, you have this, so do you feel like that's something that Republican women can also unite behind an effort to fight this?
I hope that just women in general, no matter what party affiliation she might relate to. I like to say that, you know, there are Republicans with Democratic needs, and we certainly see that. I mean, we need to look at the issue that we were talking about earlier, how are women treated in our culture, and it does reach across party lines. We are talking about, you know, 51% of our population who have jobs that pay less than their male counterpart, and how this impacts not only families but our economy overall. Women spend the money in our in our economy, and we need to be able to say, if we're going to look at how we can turn this economy around, why don't we just start with paying women the same amount as we pay men and see what happens? I mean, it's a good place to start, but I just think women are ready to see some equality and have access to birth control, that to be able to make the decisions based on their careers, their health, and their families, that those decisions should be left up to the women to make those decisions and not up to the government.
Now, do you see any other inequalities that you would like to see addressed? We've been talking about women, but are there any other inequalities that you would like to see addressed through legislation or forcing the issue throughout the campaign that you want to get a conversation going on about, whether it's, you know, class, race, sexuality, whatever?
Mm-hmm. Well, you certainly, going back to the paycheck fairness, it's even worse for women of color. And if you want to talk about violence against women, I mean, there are certain populations who are left out of that protection, who, if you're not, if you're a woman of a certain color, a certain sexual orientation, well, you're not going to be covered by the Violence Against Women Act. So definitely we have a lot of work to do in those areas. But this isn't necessarily addressed through legislation, but I would like to address it as a leader in the community, and the importance of getting women and girls in fields of technology and math and science, and to continue stressing that with our young women. You know, I was in a field at Kelly looking at trying to get students jobs in information systems and information technology jobs, and for domestic students, it is, it's one of those areas that we need to have more women get involved in, and it's I think that's something that I would want to talk about as a leader for our district and our state and our country.
Now, we were talking earlier a little bit. Now that you mentioned job creation, I'd like to talk about that more broadly. What are some ways in which you feel that Congress could harbor additional job creation?
Well, definitely accessing the federal dollars that are available to communities and making sure they come back, they return to the 9th District. I think that is one area that Congress can participate, and me actively as our Congresswoman. But definitely, you know, I want to hold the current congressman accountable for not passing good, you know, job creation bills and making certain that happens.
We've been speaking with 9th District Democratic Congressional candidate Shelley Yoder. Shelley, thank you very much for joining us here today on Interchange.
Ryan, it's been a great opportunity. I sure have enjoyed just talking with you. It's been great.
Great. So the entirety of this interview with congressional candidate Shelley Yoder will be posted later tonight on our website. Check out wfhb.org/news. You have been listening to Interchange here on WFHB. Our producers are Shane Young and Lewis Malone. Our executive producer is Allison Bektesh, and I'm Ryan Dawes. Thank you very much for joining us. See you here next week on Interchange.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers working in the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Interchange fosters unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Comments, suggestions, and program ideas may be sent directly to the Interchange staff.
The email address is news@wfhb.org.
That address once again is news@wfhb.org.